Survival of the White Race. What I have to say in the next 50 minutes is probably going to shock you. It might even profoundly shake up some of your most cherished superstitions and pet presumptions that you may have nurtured all your life without perhaps ever bothering to examine the validity or worthiness of those presumptions. This discussion is going to delve seriously into race and religion, two subjects which our power establishment tells us we must never discuss, unless, of course, you are a Jew or a black or some other so-called minority. Today, we are going to defy the Jew control power structure and discuss race and religion from the white man's point of view. In particular, we are interested in examining whether we, the white race, are going to survive, or whether we are going to be mongrelized and destroyed in a flood tide of parasitical colored races. Therefore, I want you to decide early in this presentation whether you are interested in the survival of your own kind, or whether you prefer to be a traitor to the white race, and would just as soon see it wiped from the face of the earth and supplanted by niggers, blacks, yellows, Semites, and other mud races. For make no mistake about it, the white race is a highly endangered species, a vanishing species, one that its enemies have decided must disappear from the face of the earth. If suicide of your own kind is what you wish to see, now is a good time to stop listening. If, on the other hand, you are loyal to your own kind and wish the white race to survive and prosper, then you undoubtedly are not only interested in hearing about the creativity religion, but also becoming a member of our religious movement. The creed and philosophy of our religion, called creativity, is set forth in our holy books, Nature's Eternal Religion and the White Man's Bible. The basic goal of creativity is not only the survival of the white race, but also its expansion and advancement. Since in this short dissertation, it is impossible to give the full basis of our religion, even in short summary, we must continually refer you back to our Bibles, namely, Nature's Eternal Religion, a book consisting of 49 chapters, and the White Man's Bible, consisting of 73 chapters or credos. Why are we so concerned about the survival of the white race? Basically, there are two overwhelming reasons. One, the white race is rapidly shrinking into extinction, and two, we are proud members of nature's most distinguished, intelligent, productive, and creative species. We are talking about our own survival, the survival of the white race. There are many other reasons we can cite, such as the preservation of civilization and everything else that is worthwhile in life, but all these other reasons become secondary. First and foremost, we of the Church of Creativity are concerned about the survival, expansion, and advancement of the white race for its own sake, period. The sum total of all our efforts and dedication revolve around this central issue. As soon as we begin to logically and calmly examine the impending destruction of the white race, our enemies immediately bristle and hurl at us all the time-worn clichés and invectives of racist, fascist, Nazi, and a host of others. It seems that if the Jews are loyal to Israel and to their race, that is just wonderful. If the niggers organize for the sole interest of their race and shout, "Kill Whitey," that, too, is highly commendable. If the Indians organize and commit atrocities, that, too, is to be praised. For isn't the white man responsible for everybody else's shortcomings, stupidities, and their inabilities to cope? To which we say, loudly and emphatically, no. We are not responsible for the shortcomings, defects, and stupidities of the niggers and their historical inability to create a civilization, nor to maintain it, even when the white man has brought it to them. Nor are we responsible for the colored mud race's inability to cope with the problem of feeding themselves above a starvation level. In 6,000 years of recorded history, the blacks of Africa have never even so much as invented the wheel, a written alphabet, or much of anything else. No, we are not responsible for that. Nature made them dumb, shiftless, and lazy. You can take the nigger out of the jungle, but you cannot take the jungle out of the nigger. It is not our responsibility to compensate for their defects, nor is it our duty to incorporate them into our society or into our race and thereby poison our own racial bloodstream. On the contrary, the highest law of nature commands us to make every effort for our own race to survive, to expand, and advance the genetic quality of our future generations. There is a sinister race on the face of the earth that is working feverishly for the mongrelization and final liquidation of the white race. It is a tribe that is fanatically loyal to its own kind and fiercely hostile to all other races. That tribe is the tribe of Judah. The Jewish race has frantically been striving for the last several thousand years towards its ultimate goal, the genocide of the white race. As far back as 3,000 years ago, during the days of Solomon, the rough outlines of a Jewish conspiracy were hatched, in which the final goal was the enslavement of all the other peoples of this planet and the possession of all the wealth, riches, and natural resources of the world. In the ensuing 3,000 years, the Jews have progressed steadily towards that goal, and are now on the threshold of total success. For a more detailed history of the Jews and their conspiracy, read Chapter 6 of Nature's Eternal Religion entitled Masters of Deceit, A Short History of the Jews. How, you might well ask, could the Jews possibly succeed in perpetrating such an outrage on the rest of the world? How especially on the white race, which is highly intelligent, creative, and productive. Again, for the full story, we must refer you to Nature's Eternal Religion, but we can sketch a few of the significant factors in this limited discussion. For one thing, the Jews would never be able to get to first base if it weren't for certain serious idiosyncrasies in the white race itself. The Jews are extremely skillful mind manipulators. They are tremendously expertise at spreading lies and compounding confusion. They are the historical masters of deceit. In their conspiracy to confuse, deceive, and control the mind of the white man, they have had some incredible help from the white man himself. The best help the Jew has had are two suicidal weaknesses inherent in the white man's makeup, namely his gullibility and his susceptibility to superstition. It is one of the strange paradoxes of history that whereas the white man is the most intelligent, creative, and productive creature on the face of the earth, when it comes to his being able to recognize his enemies and fight for his own survival, the white man is the most stupid creature on the face of the earth. And therein lies his Achilles heel, which the Jews have exploited to the hilt. There are other weaknesses from which the white man suffers that have been of tremendous help in the Jewish program of enslavement. Some of these other naive sense of fair play, his sympathy for the underdog, his extraordinary and exaggerated sense of compassion, his inability to realize his own outstanding worth. But far more devastating has been the white man's fatal susceptibility towards superstition, gullibility, and his strange inability to recognize his mortal enemies. Let us remember these two words, superstition and gullibility. They go together. Superstition deals with believing in the supernatural, spooks, spirits, gods, devils, angels, witches, fairies, gremlins, ghosts, etc. Gullibility refers to foolishly believing in things that aren't so, without bothering to check for evidence. These two debilities of the mind, gullibility and superstition, are the basis of almost all religious faiths that have ever been invented and perpetrated on a long, suffering humanity. If you can get people to believe in spooks in the sky, then they are often more real to the believers than the real world. Furthermore, in their fantasy, the spooks often become more important to people than the real world. They also become an extremely powerful weapon in the hands of con artists in controlling the masses of their gullible believers. It is very similar to scaring little children with a bogeyman. If they believe, then they are as afraid of an imaginary bogeyman as if he were real. Believing in a fantasy makes the fantasy as real to the believer as reality itself, and often even more so. The point is that the impostor who claims to be in with and having influence with the spooks in the sky has a powerful weapon in his hands with which to frighten and manipulate the minds of his gullible victims. And so it has been throughout the history of mankind. A book I have read shows that people have invented more than 3,000 gods and goddesses that gullible and superstitious fools believed in, even before the Jews invented their particular versions of Jehovah, Yahweh, Jesus Christ, the Holy Ghost, Satan, and a host of other imaginary spooks. The Jews, in their search of how to control and manipulate people's minds, discovered early in their history what a powerful weapon spookcraft or religion was. They utilized this discovery to its fullest in two directly opposite ways. They invented Jehovah as their own private god to bind their own people together into a fanatic racial loyalty such as the world has never seen before or since. They invented Christianity with its built-in suicidal teachings to confuse, debilitate, and destroy their enemies. How effectively they did so, we shall soon see. During the early centuries, in the rise of the great Roman civilization, Rome fought and overcame its many surrounding enemies. As Rome expanded, one of the greatest threats and its most dangerous rival was Carthage, who had established a powerful empire on the southern shores of the Mediterranean, directly opposite from Rome. For 120 years, these two rival nations intermittently fought each other in three major wars in a life-and-death struggle. Finally, when Rome triumphed, they leveled Carthage to the ground, killed the men and sold the women and children into slavery. Carthage was wiped from the face of the earth and was never again to rise as a threat to Rome. A few centuries later, in the year 70 AD, the Jews of Judea rebelled against the Roman authorities. Emperor Vespasian sent General Titus to Jerusalem with a few legions. In a siege similar to Carthage, General Titus devastated the Jews, leveled Jerusalem to the ground, and either dispersed killed or sold the population into slavery. Now we would think that in a fate similar to Carthage, the Jewish threat would have been liquidated forever and wiped from the face of the earth. But not so. On the contrary, history shows the Jews survived and the Romans as a race perished. The Romans declined rapidly after they embraced Christianity, while the imported slave populations multiplied rapidly and replaced the original Roman stock. By the year 476 AD, the Roman Empire collapsed miserably, and the original Roman racial stock, for all practical purposes, can be considered extinct. The Jews had their revenge. They had destroyed miserably and completely the Roman race, the Roman Empire, and the great Roman civilization, for all of which they harbored an intense and pathological hatred. How did they accomplish this? They knew they could not overcome the Romans in open combat, in which the Romans excelled, and the Jews, in any case, are physical cowards. Being a parasitical race and the supreme masters of deceit, they decided to employ their special weapon, namely, mind subversion. They decided to destroy the Romans by deranging their brains, and they decided to employ religion as their most powerful weapon with which to warp and cripple the Roman mind. They decided to take full advantage of these two weaknesses to which the otherwise intelligent white man is so susceptible, namely, gullibility and superstition. They invented and foisted on the Romans a new and suicidal religion, Christianity, a religion that has plagued and crippled the white man's thinking to this very day. Its founder, supposedly, was one Jesus Christ, who, according to Luke 2:21, was a circumcised Jew. What is it about Christianity that is so devastating and suicidal as to cause the breakdown of the great Roman civilization and plunge the white race into the dark ages of superstition and ignorance, poverty and misery, for the next 1,000 years? If we examine the New Testament, we won't have to go far from its original first few pages to find out. In the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6, 7, and 8, we find a mythological Christ dispensing the following suicidal advice: sell all thou hast and give it to the poor. Love your enemies. Turn the other cheek. Resist not evil. Judge not. There is more real bad and suicidal advice that, if followed, must surely lead to self-destruction and extinction of those who take such idiotic advice seriously. Let us examine a little more closely just how crazy and how destructive the above five teachings really are. Let us examine the idea of sell all thou hast and give it to the poor. If everyone was a so-called good Christian and followed that advice from their early youth, there would be no one that would ever build a business, build a home, or build a family. As soon as they had earned 2 pennies to rub together, they would immediately transfer such to the freeloaders, parasites, and the niggers who would be there waiting to relieve the working white Christian of his hard-earned savings. More likely still, the Jew, who doesn't believe in such nonsense, would beat the other parasites to the punch in relieving the foolish but gullible white man of his earnings and property. A fool and his money are soon parted. In any case, if we were all good Christian chumps, there would be no substantial citizenry left who could support the building of roads, harbors, airports, cities, homes, industry, factories, or anything else. We would, in fact, soon be reduced to a straggling horde of meandering bums, without money, without homes, without industry, without jobs, without food. Civilization would break down and be reduced to primitive barbarism. Or let's take the idea of loving your enemies. If you hadn't fallen for the first bad piece of advice, foolishly giving everything away to the freeloaders, but were gullible enough to succumb to the idea of loving your enemies, the end result would be the same: suicide and destruction of yourself. If instead of giving it away, you did manage to accumulate a home and some property, you would, in short order, be beset with thieves, pirates, and robbers, who would quickly relieve you of your money, your home, and any other belongings. Why wouldn't they? You love them, and especially since such victims would also be imbued with the stupid Christian idea of turning the other cheek and not resisting evil. The robbers would have a field day, and you would be right back to where you started, with nothing. You might as well have stuck with the first suicidal concept and given it all away in the first place. The end result would be the same. You end up with nothing. The Jews and the parasites end up with the hard-earned fruits of your labor. There is much more bad advice in the Sermon on the Mount. For a fuller examination, read chapter 13 of Nature's Eternal Religion, entitled The New Testament. Suffice it here to say that any reasonable and intelligent analysis of the bad, poisonous advice that is interlarded and interlaced throughout the New Testament always leads to the same inevitable results. The end result is self-destruction and suicide. We might well ask, why would anyone be stupid enough to want to buy such a load of garbage? It is incredible that anybody would. But we come back to those two mortal failings of the white man's mind, namely, gullibility and superstition, and the treacherous, cunning Jew played on those weaknesses to the hilt. Strange and incredible as it may seem, the Jews were successful in peddling this new suicidal religion to the Romans, and their rapidly mongrelized and deteriorating offspring of imported slaves. History tells us that the Romans bought this garbage of Christianity from the Jews. In fact, Emperor Constantine, himself a treacherous criminal, who murdered his own wife and son, amongst many others, and who was later canonized as one of the saints of the Roman Catholic Church, in the year 313 AD, decreed that Christianity was now the official religion of the Roman Empire, to the exclusion of all others. By the year 476 AD, the Roman Empire had collapsed completely. The superlative white Roman race, who produced the most splendid civilization in the golden age of classical history, and perhaps to this very day, was for all time wiped from the face of the earth. The Jews did it by feeding the Romans a suicidal new religion. The Romans bought the new poison, hook, line, and sinker, and the victims died from it. The Jews had their revenge. The collapse and destruction of the Roman Empire is undoubtedly the most colossal tragedy in the history of the white race. The original Romans exemplified much that is best in the white race. They were a brave and noble people. The Romans were creative builders and organizers. They were resolute and tenacious, strenuous and indefatigable. Daunted by no reverses or misfortunes, they never admitted defeat, having a strong sense of discipline and duty. They were clear-headed, businesslike and efficient, and finally, they were not a mere fighting race, but one gifted above all others with a genius for consolidating and organizing, and for the forming and administering of laws. Their civilization lasted for 1,000 years. It left the white race a proud legacy of laws, customs, art, sculpture, language, architecture, and government that persist to this very day. Our debt to the now extinct Romans is very great indeed. In contrast to the Romans, the Jews were the very opposite. They never built any civilization, created no art, architecture, sculpture, or anything else of value. Yet the Jews are the oldest surviving race in the world today, who have appeared and reappeared in the histories of all great white peoples, such as the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Romans, etc., for the last 5,000 years. Their most predominant characteristic has been their cunning and their deceit in boiling into the vitals of other nations, sucking out their lifeblood and destroying them. They are doing just that to the productive white race today, in Europe, in America, and in the rest of the world. Since the white race as a whole is the victim marked for mongrelization and destruction, it behooves us to seriously study our tormentor and find ways and means of warding off the suicidal path on which we, the white race, are now programmed. First of all, let us analyze why the Jews have survived for 5,000 years when more intelligent, more healthy, and powerful nations, such as the Romans, did not survive. Why did the Carthaginians disappear from the face of the earth when Jerusalem suffered a similar fate, but the inferior Jews survived to destroy the Romans? There are many reasons for this, but the overwhelming reason lies in the Mosaic religion of the Jews, which is tailor-made for this parasitical race. The Mosaic or Judaic religion has bound the Jewish race together in a fanatic loyalty which has not been matched by any other people. It has done more than that. It has given them a purpose and a program that they have pursued tenaciously for the last several thousand years. In essence, that program is to garner under the Jews all the wealth and riches of the world, and to subjugate all other people as slaves to do their bidding. A tall order, but they have been extremely successful and are nearing their ultimate goal. The Mosaic religion has done more. It has given them a philosophy which has been the core around which they have rallied throughout their long and tumultuous history. Stripped of all the window dressing, that creed essentially boils down to this: what is good for the Jews is the highest virtue, what is bad for the Jews is the ultimate sin. Nothing else matters. The survival and the welfare of the Jewish race above everything else. The Romans, on the other hand, had no such religion. True, they had a confusing array of gods, Mars, Jupiter, Mercury, Venus, and a host of others, but they meant little to the unity or stability of the Roman race. They gave the Romans no particular creed, no goals, no program, no purpose. Their religion was nothing more than a superstitious indulgence in a world of fantasy. Above all, it did not promote racial loyalty, the one ingredient which must be the core of any creed for the survival of a race. Having no serious or worthwhile religion of their own, the Romans were highly vulnerable to the cunning of the treacherous Jews, who, as we stated before, are history's masters of deceit and the most insidious and crafty mind manipulators. things the world has ever known. The Jews had one other advantage. Unlike Carthage, they were not concentrated in a Jerusalem or even in Judea. They were dispersed all over the Roman Empire, parasitically feeding, especially on the trade routes and centers of commerce. They dominated the money market, the slave trade, and many other nerve centers of power. Above all, they stuck together like glue. Since the Romans had no good religion of their own, and were therefore highly vulnerable, the Jews went about their destruction with a vengeance. They invented Christianity soon after the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. They invented the horrible concept of hell, like the bogeyman we described earlier, to terrorize and panic their foolish victims into submission. With these formidable weapons, especially the fear of hellfire and torture, they wreaked havoc on the superstitious and the gullible. The victims swallowed the whole package, including the suicidal concepts of sell all thou hast, love your enemies, turn the other cheek, resist not evil, judge not, and a whole passel of other idiotic and suicidal advice. The befuddled Romans, who in their past history had been realistic, down to earth, taken good care of their affairs, here on earth, the only place man has ever been known to live, now lost their sense of reality. Instead of pursuing their earthly duties, as Christians, their minds now meandered in a fantasy world of spooks. Their empire, their civilization, and their race went down the drain, down the sinkhole of history, never to rise again, with Jews in control of the wreckage. 1,500 years later, the Jews are still in control of the white race, even after having subjected us to 1,000 miserable years of the Dark Ages. We are still stuck in the same suicidal religion that warped the brains of the Romans and orbited their minds into the unreal world of spooks. In the meantime, the Jews have strongly consolidated their gains. Over the centuries, they have either strengthened or added to their arsenal of weapons with which to exploit and control their victims. Some of these tools, other than religion, are, first, money. The Jews control the gold, the finances, the banks, and the stock exchanges of the world. Second, propaganda. The Jews control the newspapers, wire services, television networks, movies, book printing and distribution, magazines, and every other meaningful facet of the news and influence-wielding media, both in the United States and throughout the world. Third, education. How the Jews control and blanket our educational institutions is too broad a subject to cover here. Suffice it to say that they coerce our children by force of law to attend, then indoctrinate, and pollute their impressionable young minds with destructive and depraved Jewish ideas, most of which will lead to race mixing and the racial poisoning of our future generations. Fourth, government. Having control of our nation's finances and news media, they control our government and are all over it like a swarm of locusts. This applies to all governments of the world. The most usual trick is to have some Gentile yokel, preferably Anglo-Saxon, as frontman, and have him surrounded by the real manipulators of power, all Jews. They make sure they have all the bases covered and leave no nerve center of power occupied by one, not of their tribe. The cast of characters changes constantly, but it is always a Jewish cast. Now, so far, we have been analyzing the problem. But what is the solution to the disastrous and sinister calamity which the white race finds itself boxed into today? Are we doomed to mongrelization and extinction that the Jews have scheduled for us, like they did the Romans? Or is there any hope whatsoever that the white race will awaken, shake off its stupor, organize, and forcefully seize control of its own destiny? We of the Church of Creativity say that we can free ourselves from the sinister vice in which we are now locked, and that we can regain control of our own destiny. We must. It is a matter of life and death. That we are in a horrible dilemma, there is no doubt. In 1920, the white race of the world was outnumbered only 2-1 by the colored and mud races of the world. Today, it is outnumbered 12-1 and rapidly shrinking, while the mud races are exploding at an unprecedented rate, engulfing the white race even in their traditional homelands, such as America and England. The Jewish United Nations gleefully predicts that in another generation, the white race will be outnumbered 49-1. At the rate we are going, that will most surely happen, and by that time, it will be too late. Reduced to impotence, the white race will be massacred by the flood tide of mud races at a given signal by the Jews. For generations, the mud races have been goaded and incited to hate whitey all over the world, and will be eager, ready, and willing to slaughter us as soon as they have the upper hand, and especially as the struggle for food becomes more critical. We of the Church of Creativity are convinced that we can stave off this horrible disaster, and we have the creed and the program to do it with. Had the Romans possessed it, the Jews would never have had a chance. Had the Romans had a racial religion like creativity, instead of their meaningless gods and spooks, what a different world this would be today. Instead of a world rapidly degenerating into chaos, flooded by a starving mass of mud people who cannot cope, and a world exploited by the Jewish network, we would today have instead a beautiful world populated by a creative, productive, culture-loving white race. It would be a beautiful world, minus niggers, Jews, or hordes of subhuman mud races. The genetic, cultural, and technological progress that would have evolved in the ensuing 1500 years since the Romans perished would be a marvel to behold. Something that can only tax our wildest imagination. Such a world as the Romans would have built had they marched forward with a strong racial religion is the goal of the Church of Creativity. It is not too late. What we need today is a completely new direction, a powerful new religion for the white race, a religion based on the superlative value of our race. In creativity, we have such a religion. The central core of our religion, creativity, is the survival, expansion, and advancement of the white race, and the white race alone, to the exclusion of all others. We are taking the most salient page from the history of the Jews. The golden rule of the Church of Creativity reads, "What is good for the white race is the highest virtue. What is bad for the white race is the ultimate sin." Period. Organized and united, the white race is 10 times more powerful than all the Jews, niggers, and mud races of the world combined. We of the Church of Creativity mean to organize that awesome potential of white power for the benefit of the white race. We mean to put every white man in a position where he will have to openly take a stand, either for the white race by word, deed, and action, or be exposed as a dastardly traitor to his race. There will be no Mr. In-Betweens. Whereas it is impossible to set forth our entire creed and program in this limited dissertation, we want to urge you to read and reread the Bible of our religion, nature's eternal religion. It consists of 49 chapters. It is divided into two parts. The first half is entitled The Unavenged Outrage and sets forth a problem. The second half is entitled The Salvation and blueprints the solution to the problem. The whole book can be considered the creed and program of our religion, namely creativity. I have said that it is the core of our creed to advance the welfare of the white race, to expand it until we ultimately inhabit all the good land of this fertile planet, and above all, to keep our race pure, to advance it to ever finer genetic levels. In no way does this imply waging wars of extermination against the mud races, should this be your impression, nor do we want to enslave any other race. We mean to pursue the same program of expanding the white race as the white race pursued in the winning of the West and the building of America. We mean to apply the American way to the winning of the world. The essential part of our program is racial loyalty, providing for the best interests of our own people, the white race. It is our unalterable position to stop subsidizing, feeding, aiding, and abetting the scum and parasites of the world that are now devouring our productivity and consuming our largesse. Just as the inferior American redskins were not able to compete with the white settlers, so the mud people of the world are not able to compete. It is only because of Jewish control and the perverted sense of confused loyalty that the white race is now shrinking its own, feeding and expanding the mud races to where the very survival of the white race is now in dire jeopardy. It is stupid, idiotic, and suicidal to shrink our own and expand our enemies. We of the Church of Creativity mean to reverse this process. We mean to practice white teamwork, racial loyalty, to expand the white race, and to shrink the numbers of the mud races by letting them shift for themselves. We mean to expand our numbers and our territory in the same way the white man did throughout the world during the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries. The first phase of winning our fight for survival lies in bringing the white man's thinking back to sanity. The biggest obstacle we have to overcome is not the Jews, the niggers, and the other mud races, but first of all, straightening out the white man's confused thinking. In order to survive, the white race needs a new creed, a new philosophy, in short, a completely new religion. The white man's thinking must shake off the Jewish cancer that has clouded his mind throughout the last 2,000 years and face reality. That is what the Church of Creativity is all about. It is based on reality. It is not based on pie in the sky when you die, nor fry in the sky when you die. Nor is it based on a fantasy world of spooks in the sky to whom we might vainly implore, plead, and pray for our welfare. No, we are done with the superstitious and primitive nonsense and throw it all overboard. Our religion is based on reality, the laws of nature which are eternal, which are real, which always happen the same, and always will be. And one of the highest laws which nature has spelled out to us, as to every other creature, is the survival of our own kind. This law transcends all others. Had the Romans realized this, had they kept their race pure and pursued the survival, expansion, and advancement of their own race, this would be a far better and superior world today. There is much more to our program and creed. There are the 16 commandments of the Church of Creativity. There is the program spelt out in the chapter entitled The Road to Greatness. There is a picture of a bright new world of the future towards which we are striving. It is all contained in our two holy books, Nature's Eternal Religion and the White Man's Bible. I urge you not only to read these books, but study them daily. There is much to be done if our great people are to survive. The first constructive thing you can do is to avail yourself of these books, read them, and then distribute them among your white racial comrades. The next thing you can do is to organize. Well, read the whole program in both Nature's Eternal Religion and the White Man's Bible. Remember, to be skeptical and of an inquiring mind is no vice. To be gullible and superstitious is no virtue. And may today be the day when you take a stand for the white race, when you dedicate yourself and your future to building a whiter and brighter world of tomorrow. Thank you.